This is VOA News via remote. The Biden administration has dropped U.S. sanctions on Iran. AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
In a major reversal of the previous administration's policy, the Biden administration has rescinded former President Donald Trump's restoration of U.N. sanctions on Iran. The decision was announced in a letter from acting U.S. Ambassador Richard Mills to the U.N. Security Council that was obtained by the Associated Press. The Trump administration's sanctions on Iran had been ignored by the rest of the U.N. Security Council and the world. Additionally, the State Department said Thursday President Joe Biden wants the U.S. to rejoin the 2015 nuclear agreement on Iran, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Trump pulled the U.S. out of the agreement in 2018. Mike Gracia, Washington.
NATO defense ministers made no decision on whether or when to pull out of Afghanistan at a meeting Thursday. Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said, adding that the allies faced a dilemma as violence increases again. After two decades of Western military intervention and hundreds of billions of dollars in investment, NATO countries are reluctant to heed a May 1st deadline and risk undermining progress towards democracy as a peace process stalls. Attacks in Afghanistan, including a bomb that killed the deputy governor of the capital, Kabul, in December, have prompted members of the U.S. Congress and international rights groups to call for a delay to the pullout agreed when former U.S. President Donald Trump was in office. Stoltenberg added that the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin promised to consult with allies and partners on the way forward. Again, NATO defense ministers making no decision when or whether to pull out of Afghanistan. This is VOA News. U.S. President Joe Biden and congressional Democrats have proposed a major immigration overhaul, but it does face a tough path in a closely divided Congress. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani elaborates.
Our system is broken.
Senator Bob Menendez says it's finally time to fix it after 4 years of Trump terror. Among other things, the bill would offer an 8-year path to citizenship for the 11 million people living in the country illegally, but without enhancing border security, something Republicans see as vital. Immigration policy expert Casey Higgins says the smarter path is to break the package into smaller bills, starting with something sure to get bipartisan backing.
That could break the dam and really show people that the world isn't going to end politically because we passed an immigration bill.
President Biden said he may accept a piecemeal approach if separate major elements can be approved. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Mexico rolled out the first doses of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine to elderly residents this week as it steps up the next phase of its vaccination campaign. On Sunday, Mexico received a shipment of 870,000 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine from India. On Tuesday, the country also received 494 doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Mexico and Argentina have an agreement with AstraZeneca to produce the vaccine for eventual distribution of 250 million doses in Latin America with financial support from the foundation of Mexican billionaire Carlos Slim. Mexico, which has one of the world's highest coronavirus death tolls, started vaccinating healthcare workers in December, but struggled to hit its targets amid global shortages and delays of Pfizer's vaccine. Mexico now plans to vaccinate adults over the age of 60, a group representing 12% of Mexico's 126 million people, between Friday and April. The Thai Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha on Saturday will face a vote of no confidence from Thailand's parliament as he faces backlash from a coronavirus-hit economy, as well as his handling of anti-government protests that rocketed the country for the latter half of 2020. Analysts believe that Prayuth is expected to survive the vote. Previously survived a vote of no confidence nearly a year ago after a court ban on 11 opposition lawmakers increased his ruling coalition's parliamentary majority. His ruling coalition has also come under fire in parliament over its coronavirus vaccine policy and other issues. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 19, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's army charged 7 soldiers for attacking journalists.
One of the top actions that can be taken for us would be, if found guilty, they would be
suspended
from the post.
Alleged corruption in Kenya Defense Forces recruitment. Zimbabwe rolls out its COVID-19 vaccine program donated by China. Liberia health authorities say a suspected case of the Ebola virus has proven negative, and Gambia commemorates 56th independence anniversary.
As always, I plead for national unity, reconciliation, and tolerance. The true Gambian nature is marked by warmth, sympathy, generosity, and willingness to support one another.
And coronavirus measures and their impact on indigenous people's rights. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The military says its disciplinary committee has issued jail sentences for soldiers accused of recently attacking journalists at the UN Human Rights Office. This after Army Chief General David Muhoozi apologized to journalists, saying that the attacks were neither sanctioned nor justified. He also promised that the Army will pay the journalists' medical bills. Robert Sempala, Executive Director of the Human Rights Network of Ugandan Journalists, tells viewers Peter Clotty that his group is calling for new military training to include understanding the critical role of media in promoting democracy.
It is a welcome gesture, and we all pray that the army walks the talk as far as compensations are concerned, but also making sure that these things do not happen, especially where journalists are in a very organized environment. It's not chaotic. They are doing lawful duty. Even when they are covering the opposition, the army should realize that under our setting of a multi-party political dispensation, it is extremely lawful to cover the opposition just as well as we cover the ruling party, the NRM.
The attacks were condemned by all civil society groups. Even some government officials, I understand, are displeased with it. The army said they will inform the public about the actions it will take against these officers. But what possible actions can be taken against them?
One of the stand actions that can be taken for us would be, if found guilty, they would be suspended from the force. Just like the police act would say, if one of the officers is tried through a competent court with all the jurisdiction and are convicted, certainly they would be expelled from the force. I think the army needs to take these drastic actions of singling out those direct officers and dismissing them from the force. That would serve a good deterrent purpose on the ones that are still in the force too. To make the officers implicated, meet the costs, not using the taxpayers' money because of the recklessness or abuse of power or failure to adhere to the rules of engagement.
So where does violence against journalists in Uganda stand from here? Because some people are saying that if care is not taken, this will continue, because this is not the first time security officers have attacked journalists for doing their jobs. So what happens next?
What happens next now is for us to have a very systematic and clearly organized stakeholders engagement. In here, we need to have the leadership of the security forces, to have some public journalists that have gone through thin and thick to cover stories at in the hands of all this brutality. Then we need the editors, who are the gatekeepers, who deploy the journalists, who oversee the day-to-day running of the newsrooms. At some point, bring in the UN and EU missions in here to come and make sure that whatever we're doing is overseen by a neutral arbiter. And that would serve for me a good purpose to, you know, try to scale down on these the occurrence of attacks on journalists in the line of duty, but also to have something called national security, domesticated, demystified, because there's always that argument of this is national security, and it is an excuse to abuse and violate some of these rights that are supposed to be enjoyed by journalists, even when we're not under tense political time or under a tense political season. We need to have a standard briefs and guidelines on how we can proceed. And these have to be fairly agreed upon. They shouldn't be dictated on to us by the army. And certainly we would not have also the right to dictate to the army, but we need to sit in a more organized setting and agree on the do's and the don'ts. I think that we will scale down on the occurrence of these attacks.
Robert Sempala is the executive director of the Human Rights Network of Ugandan Journalists. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Kampala. Kenya Defense Forces' ongoing recruitment exercise is facing allegations of corruption. Some Kenyan senators say the exercise is corrupt because recruitment officers are demanding kickbacks of between $3,000 to $7,000 US for a recruit to be accepted. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, security experts are pointing fingers at some Kenyan politicians for contributing to corrupting the recruitment process.
Just like many other Kenyan government institutions, Kenya's military has been tainted by corruption allegations during the exercise, where Kenyans willing to serve in the forces have to pay between $3,000 to $7,000 US dollars for one to get a slot in the military, and in this case, the highest bidder takes it all. However, a heated debate by Kenyans on social media has taken the debate to the parliament. Narok Senator Ledama Olekina has called on Committee on National Security and Foreign Relations to come up with an accountable way to carry out the recruitment exercise.
Ensure that the integrity of the recruitment process is not compromised and that there is fair opportunity for all those participating in the recruitment exercise seeking to join the KDF. Further, Mr. Speaker, KDF should identify the rogue officers demanding bribes from job seekers and take appropriate disciplinary measures against them.
In 2015, incredible allegations were made that the Kenya Defense Forces was involved in sugar smuggling from southern Somalia into Kenya to avoid import dues. Bomet Senator Christopher Langat said that most of the officers bribing their way to the military will compromise efforts by the military to serve the country.
We shall end up getting the military personnel who purchased their way to the service. So this corruption will continue. The complaints are everywhere. And in fact, even some people are saying that recruitment takes place 2 months or 3 months before the actual date. This particular matter has denied rightful Kenyans opportunity to serve their country patriotically.
A Kenyan, Adelaide Akinyi, has tried several times to secure a chance in one of the forces without success. She was eliminated last week from the KDF recruitment that took place in her area with reasons she says are well known to the recruitment officers.
I have tried Kenya Defense Forces 9 times. General Service, I have tried 7 times. Kenya Police, 4 times. Kenya Prison, 3 times. It's just a matter of keep on trying, but it is not easy. What I can say, it's all about money.
Another Kenyan, Oliver Kwej, has already given up on his dreams to join the forces. He says the corruption allegations at the recruitment center is a story of his life.
I qualified for everything. Then the guy who was in charge asked me if I could have some money. He asked for 20,000 shillings so that I can be given the job. So I didn't have the money. So I was told to go until next time. From that time until today, I've not tried.
On the other hand, security expert George Masamali faults the government for not intervening even after complaints were raised by members of the public.
Politicians are the main beneficiary of these kind of happenings during recruitment. KDF has been blamed for taking bribes from the militia and allowing them to cross into the country. And this has become a major security lapse.
The KDF has since refuted claims that the recruitment exercise is marred with corruption and that investigations on those found taking bribes in the exercise is being carried out. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Zimbabwe rolled out its COVID-19 vaccine program on Thursday, with health workers getting the first of 200,000 doses of the Sinopharm vaccine donated by China. As Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA from Harare, one group is pressing the government to conduct more clinical trials.
Once again, we want to appreciate the Vice President of the Republic of Zimbabwe and the Minister of Health and Child Care.
Officials watched and then clapped after Zimbabwe's Vice President Constantino Chiwenga received his jab of the Sinopharm vaccine. This marked the beginning of Zimbabwe's COVID-19 vaccination program, aiming to reach 10 million citizens and achieve herd immunity. Chiwenga, who doubles as the country's health minister, said Zimbabwe was winning its war against COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus.
The marked decline in new cases of coronavirus is vividly heralding the end of the second wave of the pandemic. Despite the slump, the government of Zimbabwe adopted a second line of defense to augment preventive measures to combat COVID-19. The second layer of defense is the procurement and rollout of COVID-19 vaccines. My ministry conducted all scientific processes to ascertain the efficacy of Sinopharm vaccine, which was confirmed to be 79%. My presence here today with some Minister of Health officials is to exhibit the government's confidence in the Sinopharm vaccine.
Some citizens and rights group question the efficacy of the vaccine and are calling on the government to conduct clinical trials before offering it to the public. On Wednesday, the group Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights said it would take the government to court if authorities do not conduct clinical trials of the Sinopharm vaccine and continue the free and voluntary vaccination program. Just outside where Chiwenga was vaccinated, 42-year-old Quinton Hassan said he doesn't want to hear their legal arguments.
I want to be vaccinated because it's the way forward. Without being vaccinated, we're going to get nowhere in this world here. It's very important to be vaccinated and not listen to all the rumors about this vaccine. It is not to kill you, it is to protect you.
But he has to wait for long before his turn comes. Zimbabwe has only 200,000 doses of Sinopharm vaccine received on Monday from the Chinese government. On Thursday, Chiwenga said more vaccines would come for all Zimbabweans willing to be inoculated. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, February 19. Liberian health authorities say a suspected case of the Ebola virus has proven negative. Health Minister Wilhelmina Jala says a patient who showed signs of the virus after returning from neighboring Guinea in early February was tested on Thursday, but that the results were negative. Liberia was one of the three West African countries hit hard by the Ebola virus disease in 2014. Early this week, Guinea confirmed a new Ebola outbreak near its border with Liberia. Health Minister Jala tells reporter Moses Gaziewu that Liberia remains on high alert and is ready for any spate over.
The suspected case that was the most talked about information circulating, we ran the test for Ebola and that test was confirmed negative this evening. So therefore making Liberia have no confirmed case of Ebola currently.
How did Liberia in fight get connected to a suspected case of the Ebola virus again?
Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone are almost like sisters, and anything that affects one of those countries might affect the other country. This lady came in on the 12th, so prior to anything surfacing, and she was very ill at two facilities. And because she was from that particular area, that information hurting the alert, and so therefore we are not letting any rumors or alert pass by us. we are going to be testing any suspected or alleged cases that is announced or reported by anyone.
How strong are you with your border surveillance measure?
The borders that are closed, we don't have to worry about them. If anybody come in, they have the regular check. It's like the regular check that we were doing for COVID. You're looking for fever, you're looking for anybody that look ill, making sure that people follow the health protocol in terms of washing their hands and stay a safe distance from others. And we're working with the community at the borderline to be able to recognize any stranger that entered their village. And this is the way how you have to bring the fight to the community by working closely with the borderline community to be able to recognize any stranger or anybody that's ill within their environment.
Are you saying that Liberia has closed borders with the two countries already affected?
Borders were already closed from us for the COVID-19. So Guinea border were closed, Sierra Leone border were closed. So we are just adding to the closure. Nobody has opened the border. So it's not anything that we are doing special. Those borders were already closed, only allowing trucks and goods to cross.
The Ebola pandemic is not a strange phenomenon to you. How prepared are you this time around?
Thanks to our predecessors and all the countries that supported Liberia and educated all the Liberian health staff, today I think we are much better prepared than when it first hit. We have few epidemiologists. We have the National Public Health Institute set up. We have a lot of structures in the counties set up. We have community healthcare workers directly in the community. So we have a lot of expertise. I think every individual in Liberia is an expert because they live through the Ebola and they know what to do.
Liberia's Health Minister Wilhelmina Jala was speaking with reporter Moses Garcia-Wu from the capital, Monrovia. Gambia's President Adamawa Barrow has reaffirmed his government's commitment to protecting Gambia's sovereignty, while at the same time calling for national reconciliation and unity. Speaking Thursday to mark Gambia's 56th independence anniversary, President Barrow also called on citizens to work hard for the development of the country and to stay away from illegal drugs use. Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, USA.
Despite the recent spike in coronavirus cases that hasn't stopped Gambia from celebrating its 56th independence anniversary, though it was observed in a low key to avoid the spread of the virus. Addressing a parade in Banjul on Thursday, President Barrow calls for national unity.
As always, I plead for national unity, reconciliation and tolerance. The true Gambian nature is marked by warmth, sympathy, generosity, and willingness to support one another. Let us apply these values wherever we may be.
The president has called on citizens to live by the dictates of the national anthem. He knows that peace and national development can only be achieved provided that Gambians are united.
For the good of all, we need to give a new meaning to national independence through our relationships, interaction, and service to the nation. Within the framework of good governance, speedy development, and peaceful coexistence in a nation and government for all citizens.
Barrow warns citizens to refrain from acts that would destabilize the country.
We have witnessed how partisan politics and conflicts pull people apart and undermine the power and glory of nations, no matter how great they may be. Not even the most powerful are spared of division if the law is not upheld.
Barrow's speech also centered on Gambia's sovereignty. West African troops, ECOMIC, have been in the country since 2016 in a bid to help the Gambia to sail through its transition period post-dictatorship.
Our sovereignty should be measured, therefore, by the extent of our security as a nation, as individuals.
Barrow has reaffirmed his government's commitment to revamp the education sector and fighting COVID-19. Usain Ojabo is the leader of the main opposition United Democratic Party, UDP.
Fellow Gambians, each day we hear the news of our sisters and daughters losing their lives whilst giving life. Each day we hear of our sons and daughters dying in foreign lands, being deported back home unceremoniously, or drowning because they dared to cross the Sahara Desert and the Mediterranean Sea to look for greener pastures. Each day we hear the cries of our mothers, our wives, our sisters, about the high cost of living and the inability to feed their children.
Dabo has also warned against tribal politics. He says a UDP government wouldn't tolerate it.
Tribalism has no place in our society, and we should never allow anyone to use tribalism to draw religious boundaries in our country and communities.
Dabo has called on the government to prioritize the fight against COVID-19. He has announced the postponement of his party's fundraising event. This followed the government's move to suspend all public gatherings amid recent spikes in COVID-19 cases. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the latest FIFA rankings, where Senegal's national team, the Teranga Lions, maintained their rankings as the continent's number one football nation, according to Thursday's ranking released by the World Football Governing Body. Senegal is followed by Tunisia in second place, Algeria is third, Morocco is fourth, while Nigeria is in fifth position to wrap up Africa top five in that order. The next FIFA Coca-Cola World rankings will be published on April 8th, 2021. Staying with football news, Mamelodi Sundowns will now be traveling to Algeria for their CAF Champions League match against CR Belouizdad after receiving communication from CAF confirming that their match, which was scheduled for Tuesday 23rd of February, has been cancelled due to further medical restrictions in Algeria. The cancellations comes after the Algerian FA requested a postponement due to further medical restrictions in Algeria, whilst Mamelodi Sundowns were preparing for departure to Algeria. Mamelodi Sundowns had made all the necessary arrangements and acquired visas, which were made available by the Algerian embassy last week. And now to the total under 20 African Cup of Nations, where Burkina Faso came from behind to beat the Central African Republic 3-1 at the Sheikh Aoud Bouhidia Stadium to increase their chances of making the quarterfinals. The win moves the Stallions of Burkina Faso to the summit of the Group B alongside Tunisia, who beat Namibia 2-0 in the day's first match. In the meantime, the 2020-2021 Total CAF Confederations Cup group stage draw will be conducted on Monday, the 22nd of February 2021 in Cairo, Egypt. The first leg of the additional second preliminary round took place on February 13th and 14th. The return leg is scheduled for this weekend. The aggregate winners from the last leg of preliminaries will qualify for the group stages. Apart from the title holders, RS Bakani of Morocco, who have already qualified for the group stage, there are 15 places to fill to complete the team quota for the four groups of four teams each. In basketball news, the second and final round of the AfroBasket qualifiers got underway in Tunisia and Cameroon this week, with Nigeria's senior men's national basketball team, the Tigers, becoming the first team to qualify for the 2021 FIBA AfroBasket Championship after beating Rwanda 64-51 on Thursday. It was a second loss for Rwanda at the ongoing Window 2 qualifiers in Monastery, Tunisia, and the fifth since the start of the qualifiers last November. And finally, in athletics, world marathon record holder Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya is set to participate in this year's Hamburg Marathon, slated for April the 11th. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, February 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
On this week's Press Conference USA, host Carol Castiel speaks with Jennifer Cavanaugh, senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation, about the phenomenon of truth decay. A diminishing reliance on the facts and analysis in American public life, which threatens to undermine democracy. Listen to Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America,